So there's two things going on here. We can even go back to the FDA part. Each tone doesn't represent a bit. The tones can represent a triad, for example, in FT8, where it's three bits, and they've spaced them so that there's only one bit difference between the bits that are in one triad versus the other. And then it's how fast they're switching the symbols is your symbol rate, your baud rate, determines how wide the bandwidth of the signal is.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So I think one of those two things was what was tripping you up, right? Like if you send it, one bit per second, you have a very narrow signal. But if you're sending at, I don't know what the other one was, 1,000 bits, you know, or a million bits per second, you have you need 2 meters. You need a really wide bandwidth, or 6 meters or something.
Yeah, and this is basically 1.4 hertz difference in the four tones. That's totally indistinguishable for you know, the highest tone is 4 hertz above the lowest tone. I don't think we could hear the difference. Okay. If the difference between C and C sharp is 15 hertz. So this is going to sound like a continuous tone to us, but it ain't. All right. Each transmission is the call sign and the grid square and the transmitter power. That's it. That's all we're sending. So for the balloon, when we needed to send additional data, there's a whole nother protocol that Mike figured out. Mm-hmm. It's been written, but Mike actually had to implement it, where they take a second whisper packet and they stick into that the last two digits of a grid square. So FM29JR, the JR goes into the second packet. And is it, what's the other set? Power?
You could jam about 5 different pieces of sensor data into it, but it sends it in the second transmission with a spoofed call sign. And you have to look immediately after that time slot for that call sign that has like maybe 3 characters that you would identify. And then it takes the other characters of the call sign in addition to the rest of the message to decode the sensor data.
Your third block of text answers my question. It's the segment that's 200 hertz wide, not the signal itself. The signal is only, I don't know, 18 hertz wide.
Yeah.
Spacing. Yeah, it's the segment. They're saying 30 signals. 30 signals can fit into that 200 hertz. It's not just one
transmission. Okay.
That explains your third block.
Good. I'm glad I did. I'm glad AI made these slides up instead of me, because I would have skipped that. So, I mean, this is sending very, very little data. And it's taking 2 minutes to send it. And it's sending it really, really slow. And that's why it works. Okay, we don't have to worry about meteors disappearing. We don't have to worry about Doppler shift. Okay, we're talking about HF propagation, which is generally pretty uniform over a 2 minute period of time. And so in all of these things, it's the use case that defines the differences in how they all work. They're all designed for a specific use case. And that's what I didn't understand as well when I started this. You can't use MSK-124 for moon bounce because it's not going to handle a Doppler shift. All right. You know, you can't use 265 for meteor scatter, because the transmissions are too long. Everything's designed for a specific use case, and that's why it works. This is UTC synchronized start. Okay, so it's synchronous. You've got to be starting at exactly the right time. We had to get the clocks on the balloons right.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay, because otherwise you can't decode anything. If your clock's off, same as FT8.
And the way that it does that is through GPS lock.
There you go. If you got a GPS on the balloon, which we do, that's why that went.
Now, a different question. You guys are using 20 meters to do whisper, right?
Yes.
Is that the optimal band for doing this?
It is the one that is configured in the hardware that we have. However, you could use other low pass filters to do other bands if you want. But typically 20 meters has always been successful for us.
Yeah,
we tried 10 and
stuff like that. And of course, this thing feeds into PSK reporter, the same as the others do. Okay, so everybody's familiar with PSK Recorder, I hope. If you're not, go open up PSKRecorder.com. You can specify the transmission mode that you want, and you can see who's reporting who. Is everybody familiar with the PSK Recorder is?
And you can see who's hearing you.
Yeah, well, that was the thing. So basically, it's a website that WSJT will automatically report to. So if you hear someone in Whisper or you hear someone in Meteor Scatter, WSJT will automatically send the fact that the WB2MNF heard KG4JYA at a particular time, and it will dump it onto a map. Okay, and that's how we found out that, you know, our signal was getting out. You know, it's a nice way of testing your transmitter without having to talk to anybody. Okay, if there's nobody to QSO with, you make a transmission and look on PSK Reporter. That's how we found out we were getting out on Meteor Scatter. Okay, when nobody was coming back to us. Okay, we didn't hear them coming back, but they heard us and they show up on MSK. The other thing that PSK Reporter showed us on the Meteor Scatter and also on EME is where in the U.S. is it working? So, for example, you won't hear any moon bounce, any Q65 signals coming from an area of the Earth where the moon hasn't risen yet. Okay? You won't hear any meteors coming back when there aren't any meteors. So I could tell, for example, at 4 o'clock in the morning that MSK-144 Meteor Scatter reports were hitting the East Coast. By 6:30, they weren't. There was nobody reporting on the East Coast. It was out in Colorado and Utah and stuff like that. Time to go home.
Sometimes when the 6 meter band opens, you could use it to determine whether or not it's a meteor or whether it's just the band is open, because you'll see everybody using it as opposed to just people doing Meteor Scatter.
Well, and the interesting thing for Meteor Scatter is, you know, you've got a waterfall display, and this is a 30 second transmission. If you've got a solid line down for 30 seconds, that ain't coming off a meteor.
No. Okay?
That's coming off the guy over in Philly who's also up at 4 o'clock in the morning. But if you see a little blip, that is a meteor, you know. And also if it's like a 4 call or something like that, you know, that's a meteor. If it's a 3 call or a 2 call, no, it's the guy next door. So you can't count that stuff.
Something else I noticed about WSJTX is that, you know, when it communicates stuff to PSK Reporter, there's a gigantic log file that it keeps local on your machine. So if something scrolls past the screen and you say, oh, well, I thought I saw that guy, you could always go to that log and then see if, you know, what happened earlier. And, you know, every once in a while, you may want to clear it out. But if you're using things like, what is that, Grid Tracker, Steve?
Yeah.
I think Grid Tracker uses that file to initially populate your map, right?
Yeah, that log file is limited in size, and once it gets to a certain size, it starts clipping off the beginning and just...
Oh, it starts again? It rolls over?
Well, it appends to the end and deletes the beginning.
Oh, okay.
It has a maximum... When it starts to write, it starts to fill up that file. When the file gets full, it keeps on writing, but the beginning of the file is deleted out.
Is the file like what, 2 gig or something?
I forget what the size is on it. It's not that big.
What you're saying is generally right, but like for people who do long-term studies, you can use like the WSJT enhanced version, and there's an option in there to have it give it a new number. So you'll have your .all1 and your .all2 and your .all3. It'll just keep making them, so we'll never throw that data.
Okay, good to know.
Okay, so that was WSJT, and this is just next couple slides are just a summary of everything. Any questions on anything before? So this is basically just, you know, summarizing everything. The main thing, again, I've said this before, is knowing the use case. If you know the use case, you understand why it was designed the way it was. And if you just think back on, you know, FP8 being live QSO, speed is of interest, as opposed to MSK, meaning you're looking for a quick transmission, as opposed to JT65 or Q65, meaning you've got all the issues of bouncing off the moon. Then you can kind of tell what the difference is. I didn't get into FP4 and FP2 because, from what I understand, they're just variations on FP8. Okay, they're just shorter. They're just shorter.
Yeah.
Okay,
and because different frequency. So
okay.
Yes.
Okay. And what they're doing is they're eliminating some of the redundancy, and because they're eliminating some of the redundancy, they're not sensitive. Okay, and some of the there are tables out there that will show you the signal to noise ratio of FT8 and FT4 might be minus 16 dB and FT2 might be minus 12 dB or something like that. That's because it's shorter and it's eliminating some of the redundancy. Okay, so you don't have as many chances to make up with the packets that you missed. But the use case is the same. The protocol is the same. The only thing that's different is the length of transmission. Whereas in these cases, the use cases are very different. The method of transmission is very different. That's why I covered these and I didn't cover FT4 and FT2, even though they're probably more popular. So that's a comparison. And that's also a comparison. And the use cases are different. Periods are different. Whisper is, much better. Whisper is than MSK144. Because MSK144, you've only got 200 milliseconds to send your data, and here you got 2 minutes. Yeah, you can pack a lot more redundancy into 2 minutes than you can there. Okay, but with MSK144, you either get it or you don't. There's no other way to do it. And then this is, it threw in all this stuff, but you probably already know how to do it. The FT8 software is general HF, everybody runs FT8. Q65, we're running with the dish and the 1296 transverter on the flex with the 1296 amplifier, a little more than 200 watts. Once it starts getting warm, we're going to start using that again because there are opportunities to work EME that are outside of the EME contest. So we'll start working on that, in a couple of months when it gets warmer. The MSK144, the meteor scatter, we've been running that on 6 meters, generally in the other room. We'll take the, I'm trying to remember where we're using, because we're using the 6 meter beam.
Yeah.
And you want to point it towards where the meteors are, which is kind of interesting. So you got to try and figure out where the meteors are. And the way you figure out where the meteors are is you use the photography software that tells you how to shoot pictures of meteors. The problem is that, sometimes, when you can only shoot pictures of meteors when it's dark, but you can work meteor scatter when it's light. So the photography software doesn't help you with that. But we're using that, and we were using the big amplifier. So if I remember right, we had coax running all the way to the length of the clubhouse from the 6 meter antenna in there out to the 1500 watt amplifier in there. And we're running that. And like I said, that comes up during the meteor showers, most of which were in the last couple of months. If anybody wants to do it, 4 o'clock in the morning, you got to be, your ass better in that chair. If I'm here, you're not. won't be good. That's pretty much it. So I figured we'd take about an hour and that's where
we're good.
Any questions or anything like that? I just hope that this was
a heroic effort.
Well, this is just curiosity, right? How does all this stuff work? So if you want to actually do it, talk to Steve.
It was very interesting.
Go ahead, Steve.
The things that I learned today is from what John was saying, I'll show you on Weak Signal Joe Taylor -X where all these FT8, FT4s line up on the software. We can see where you can go back and forth between the different functions of FT8. We run FT8 version 3.00. It's a beta version, but it's been around for a while now, and it's going to probably go to a non-beta version shortly. It's changed from 2.7, where you don't have to go on the left side to go to your different bands. They have icons right across the top of the screen. Then you can just click on the band that you want. It's really a lot easier.
But it is stable? The 3.0 is stable?
Yes.
It's not buggy or anything?
I was running 2.8, and I had a few crashes with that, so I moved up to the 3.0. I've had no crashes.
Yeah, and just, I should have taken a picture of this. This is WSJT. This is 2.6, so I'm way back in versions. But basically mode, and there is FT4, FT8. There's Q65. There's MSK144. And there's Whisper, which is what I had it clicked on. So the last time I was using it here, I was using it with Whisper. So it's all in WSJTX. You just go select it and run it. So.
Yeah.
I think you'd like me to put it on. It has all those features and more. It includes the FT2 now as well. It's like you're more on the edge of the development. And the decoding differences have jumped, like you said, 2.7, I think it was, versus the 3 was like night and day. And it's included all of those features as well. I mean, I was getting like a quarter of a screen of decodes. I instantly switched to the other one, and it was more than a full page.
What version is this?
It's called WSJT Improved.
Oh.
It's a forked version that they vice versa move features back and forth from. But one of the things I like the most is it has different display options. So if you have a wide display, or if you've got just a laptop display, if you're like me, the darn signals, they go beyond what you can see because there's stuff at the bottom. Well, you download a different version, and you get the entire height of the display to show your decodes. And then the other stuff is on over on the right now.
Does it?
But it has all the buttons you're talking about. Like you want to change bands, you just click. You don't need more drop downs. You want to go between FT4, FT8. Whatever, just click it.
Does it integrate with like software the same way?
Yes, it does. And one more plug, because
I'll write no relation to the software.
Right.
I will be writing an article probably for next month about the FT2.
Oh, cool!
But the original people who came out with the FT2 were Italians, and they. Not
count to four.
They didn't.
Hey, they
didn't open source their code yet, which was making people furious because they're open source projects. And so the people that do the WSJT Improved, they wrote it compatible but open source. They already published it, taking those Italians to the picture.
Yeah, how did it become irrelevant very quickly? Yeah. Not to share your code in an open source.
It was crazy. The guy, Jerry Jacobus, who I used to do field day with, he was the guy who turned it on to me. And I start looking, I'm like, what is this FT2 stuff? He said, oh, it's damn fast. It's really fast. People were posting videos and stuff. I think it was only 6 days old in the wild by the time that he showed me. And I'm taking screenshots now, and it's just as busy as FT4, if not busier.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
I'm surprised FT4 isn't as busy as it is.
During field day, I really only used FT4. That's perfect for a field day.
Yeah.
They haven't enabled FT2 for doing any of those kinds of contests yet. Because they haven't decided if they're going to keep it or not. But it's wild to try.
I use FT4 for 13 counties.
Yes.
For that kind of cut.
Well, I go back and forth. I'll try FT8 for a while, then I'll go to FT4, and then you pick up different people. Or sometimes we pick up the same person and just switch them back. It's just the same as you are.
I think I've heard FT4 on RS-44 on one of the satellites. There is some digital activity. But I'm wondering how it handles the Doppler shift, because this is not something, if it's not corrected for Doppler, it shouldn't work very well. Unless your radio is correcting for it, which of course usually is.
Am I done recording?